You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Pacers fans, happy Wednesday. Hope you're looking forward to Finals Game 3 tonight. I know that Game 2 was a bit of a blowout after me and Adam recorded talking about Game 2. Or game one. I guess we only talked about the charge. But anyway, game three tonight. Hopefully the Cavs win because I want to see more basketball games this season. I really hate the end of the year. I don't know why fans get so into the end and wanting the sweep and all this stuff. It's like, man, like you're going to be sad when the NBA is gone. But anyway, let's talk some Pacers because it's fun to talk to Pacers, and that's what this podcast is all about. And we're going to continue on our trend of doing these player recaps solo. As always, I'm one of the hosts of the Locked On Pacers podcast, Tony East, with the West Indianapolis Community News, or as Adam says, the man of too many titles, which is not that many. I hate that he does that. I don't actually hate it, Adam, if you're listening. But anyway, for our player reviews today, this one's going to be harder for me because, one, I'm by myself for a solo player, which, if you haven't noticed, the only ones I've done solo, the only one I did solo so far was Bojan, who I'm just obsessed with, so it was super easy for me to talk forever about him. And then I did solo the end of bench guys and two-way guys, which was like seven or six players or something. So it was easy to talk for a long time about that. And then I did Sabonis with Johnny. So I've never done like one player by myself that, you know, that I don't have a ton to say, as much to say about. And I'm doing the guy who was injured for more than half the year, Glenn Robinson, the third today. And that's going to make this one pretty hard. But it's also an okay segue into a lot of things in that the injury is probably the starting point because it's, one, the story of his season, and two, could end up being the story of his future in a kind of a sad way almost. But I remember I said this exact quote on the pod a million times before, but I'll say it again anyway. I mean, after last year when he was playing, starting at two guard for a lot of the season, I actually want to look at his play-by-play from 2016-17, what his positional splits were. Yeah, he played over half his minutes at shooting guard that year, and, you know, his kind of, I wouldn't call it a transition, but, and he's more natural as a three because he's 6'6 and he's a good defender. So, you know, because he proved that he could start at any wing spot that at that two guard season, and we'd seen what he could do with the three, it was kind of like, okay, this guy has a future. He's only 23. He already had started, so he already had a present. Like, what I'm getting to is what I've said before is that he was on both of the Pacers timelines. He was on their win now timeline, where if they were somehow good, he would have been, you know, this is what the thought before the season, you know, if they were somehow good, he could be a spot starter, like the sixth man wing, and he could be a huge help. And I remember Adam at one point was telling me he was going to get like 4 for 50 in free agency this coming summer, which is hilarious now. So he was on the be good now timeline, but he's also on the future timeline because he was only 23. Him and he was going to be great next to Vic, he could be great next to Vic and Miles in the future. He could, you know, he could fit in on both timelines, and then he just rips his ankle to shreds in practice, which is just devastating, especially for a guy like him who's so good. Or was showing a lot of promise. I guess he wasn't like so good, but it really hurt a lot. And some people were even saying he should start over Bojan before the year. Like, he clearly had a spot in a lot of fans and hearts, and he could fit in on the court. And then that injury really set him back. I mean, he missed, 59 games this year, which sucks so much. And 59 games is like a crazy, if you think about 59 games, like, people are saying Steph played in 52 games, and that's barely enough to make All-NBA. Like, JR3 missed that many. That's crazy talk how many games that is. And then even when he was back, probably the first, I don't even want to guess. Probably, I'd say just say half. Let's go with 10 or 11 of those. You know, he wasn't even unleashed his full JR3. I remember the first one he played in was that Hawks game where the Corey Joseph fall happened. And it was crazy because he was okay on D. He was, you know, matching up with whoever and doing okay. But on offense, he would just kind of start on the wing and then cut through the corner and then just stand there and spot up the whole time. And he was so uninvolved that it was like impossible for me to say that he was doing anything crazy. He only ended up scoring like 4 points in that game, even though he played like 20 minutes. And his role was just so diminished that I didn't think he would ever amount to much. And then he didn't take more than 4 shots in a game until his 12th game. Like, he was just so limited, or excuse me, after that first game, he didn't take more than 4 shots in a game until his 12th game. And he only shot over 4 shots in a game 5 times, and one of those was the game he started, which you expect that to happen. So his offensive role was just so diminished from last year, where he was such a good spot-up shooter and such a good cutter, and some of that's playing off of Paul George is different than playing off of Vic, especially when in one you're playing two guard and one you're playing the three. But I mean, it's just, it was very odd to see his role get diminished to that for those first 11 games, and I kind of seemed like it took him out of any sort of rhythm that he, quote-unquote, would have had, and he just looked out of place standing in the corner like that. Like, he didn't make a three till like, his eighth attempt or something, and then he didn't even shoot a three for three games after that. Like, his game log is kind of sad to look at for a guy who had so much promise and looked like he was part of, you know, the, like I said, the two timelines, and to see that happen really sucked. But when he came alive, he really was solid. That first game that I was talking about where he took more than four shots, he went 0 for 5, which was not a good one against Washington, and then they held him out the next game. But then, you know, he went 3 of 3 at that 3 of 6 game against Golden State where he ran that. That was the game where I felt like he finally was back. Even though it was the Pacers' 75th game of the season, it felt like they were getting a new player because I know he caught one on – he caught like a sweet lob on a backdoor inbounds play, and he – came around a Savona screen and hit a tough fadeaway from the wing, and he just looked like he was spry, and like they were calling plays for him and stuff, which was really cool. Then he killed it in that Toronto game, and they got smoked by 19. He was only minus 3 and was 4 of 7 and hit a bunch of threes. I think that was his first time of the season scoring 10 points, or second time, I think, and then he scored 10 the last three games. You know, he did good against Charlotte both of those times, and he got to start and play 40 minutes in that last game, which kind of screws up his stats a little bit. But because, you know, you look at his minutes this season and you see that he played 338 minutes. Yeah, but he played under 200 or under 300, you know, before that last game where they really just threw him into the fray. He still only scored 13 in that game where they threw him in. I mean, he wasn't really aggressive with his shot. So it was just really odd for him offensively all year because of, you know, he missed obviously 58, 59 games. And they really eased him in so slow that it was hard to foresee a role for him. And he wasn't like taking guys off the dribble ever, which never really was been his thing, but that was kind of the next step for him. And I can't tell if that's an ankle thing or just the way he plays thing. But either way, that's really unfortunate because I think that's the next step for him on offense. I want to say he was in like the 60th or 70th percentile of cutting that full season in 2016-17, which is really good for someone his age. And he's get, you know, it's a lot of cutting is timing. I don't want to say exact like all of it, but a lot of it's timing and a lot of it's, you know, how fast you run, and a lot of it is just like chemistry with your teammates. But it still shows something when you're that young, especially on a team with that low of chemistry, to be that good. So I thought that was something that he could be good at again. And then we all seen the spot up shooting, and that wasn't really there this year at first. So I thought if he could get beat guys off the dribble, you know, he could really have a full palette of offense, and he did not show that at all, and that's part of why I think his role was so diminished. But the injury probably had a lot to do with that too. The shooting was back after it started off just crap. I think I'm going to start again with those first 12 games. Sorry, not 11. In those first 11 games, he was shooting 17% from three, and then in the last 12. He shot, I want to say 50%, over 50%, 54.5%, so 55% over that last sample group. So it was really like a tale of two seasons for a guy who only played 23 games, which is so fascinating. But he ended up at 41.2% from deep, which is crazy thinking about it. He went 14 of 34. If you remember his first season in Indiana, he went 14 of 37, and everyone was screaming that he should be shooting more. So that's pretty good. And you like to see that skill stay around even after the injury. So he's clearly got some semblance of shooting in his future. Like, no matter what else he can do, he can shoot. And he can play defense, and that is just massive. You know, I think it's really understated about how good his defense is. I mean, in his first game back, you saw him have impact against the Hawks with guys who couldn't get past him. You know, he shoveled his feet and stood with him. He got a steal on, like, his third possession. They credited it to Oladipo, which is hilarious, because that was during his steal streak, which is still going on, but at the time, it was like, oh, if it's close, just give it to Depot. But, like, GR3 jumped up and tipped it and then tipped it again, and then Depot ended up catching it. So, I mean, it ended up being a steal for Oladipo, but it should have been GR3, if we're being honest. But his defense was really good. Still not the step you would have wanted from him, just given that because he got hurt. It's not like he didn't do something that I wanted him to do after he got hurt. But, like, before he got hurt, I would have liked for him to be a little better than this. But defensive rating of 104.9 is really good. Right around Miles Turner level. He fit in with the team defense thing really well. His defensive box plus minus was close to as good as last year. I want to say it might have been better, actually. I didn't do that beforehand. No, it was close to as good as last year. So, you know, small steps back are what they are. But when you're hurt, that's what it is. So I think he didn't take a step back. That was me just struggling to continue to talk for this long. You know, a small step back in the stats are what they are, but, you know, he was just as good as you would expect given that he was injured for so long. And another thing from him that made him so effective, was after those cuts, he got to the free throw line. He was solid. 81% from the free throw line this season is exactly what you want to see. But, you know, we have to hit the elephant in the room of the injury, which hurts your athleticism a ton, and that hurt GR3's finishing around the rim a lot. His two-point field goal percentage, which is a stupid stat, by the way. No, it's not, but it's not a good barometer with how many games he played. It's a stupid stat to say, like, he was a terrible finisher on the rim. But he only shot 43% inside the arc, which is a career low for him. But his field goal percentage at the rim, which is a much better stat because it actually shows something. His field goal percentage at the rim, 62.5, which is fine. He was terrible in the mid-range, which is bad. And a lot of that was his 3 to 10 foot, like, in the restricted area stuff. That's where he was abysmal. 38.5% career low. That 62.5% at the rim was his second best. So, I guess it's only over three seasons of actual data because he had such small sample sizes his first season. But, you know, he got a little worse in that restricted area. I think he was shying away from contact because of the injury. He didn't have quite the springiness that he had in the dunk contest championing year. So that is what it is. It's expected, but you would like to see him get a little better from there, especially since the Pacers were so good at the mid-range, him struggling pretty much from all distances. I mean, he shot 26% on long twos. That's terrible, and you don't even want him taking that shot anyway. Like, these are things you'd want him to get better at. And then, you know, if he's not going to be making those, you know, he's got to just be – you want him to be 3 points and at the rims only, which are his two skills, but then that defeats the purpose of him gaining an off-the-dribble thing and doesn't even make him a starter level if he can't beat guys off the dribble. Like, what's the point of him being out there just for defense and spotting up when his defense isn't, like, that amazing? So it's tough to see that he hasn't really come around on that skill yet. That is one that I thought, even without the ankle, you know, he could finish in the lane a little bit better than that. So that is a concerning thing. Something else that I just saw that I do like, 100% of his three-pointers in the corner were assisted. Sorry, 100% of his three-pointers were assisted, which is awesome. I love when guys don't shoot unless, like, don't shoot off the dribble ever. And he shot 62.5% from the corners, which is just blisteringly hot. And it's something that he's good at. And, you know, even when, like I said, even when his role was diminished, that's where they had him. So that's good. At least they know where to stick him if he can't really run around as much. But going forward, this is where things get tricky for GR3 because I think a lot of people want the Pacers to sign a wing or draft a wing or something like that. And I think that seems really likely. I mean, Bojan was good and Lance is who he is, but I mean, they just need, like, a stable hand almost, another stable hand. Like, if Bojan gets injured this year, we're like, they're screwed. Lance could have come in and started, that's fine, but, like, in those 59 games without GR3, your next wing was, like, Wilkins, and then when they waived him, like, who the heck would have even filled in those minutes? It would have been so complicated. So I think it's very likely they sign or draft a wing for depth purposes, and if they do, that'll really hurt GR3 standing in the rotation if he even comes back. And I don't know if I've ever said this on the pod or if I've just wrote about this, but, you know, I think for him, he's never gotten a big payday. This contract was really small for him. He was on minimums the whole time before this, and his role is falling out here in Indiana. I think he has a lot of ulterior motives for his next contract that might not suit him very well here. You know, something like he could want his first big, like, winning his first big payday would mean, like, Dallas or Atlanta, who's just trying to snap up this wing, might give him more money than the Pacers want to, or playing time, same thing with Atlanta, or, like, the Knicks even could use the wings for playing time. Stuff like worse teams, basically, than the Pacers might be able to offer him a lot more playing time, and that could be attractive to him, given the way his career arc is going, which might make it tougher for him to come back, you know, especially if he sees that they're looking into, like, an Ariza or an Mbamute or even an Aaron Gordon. Like, those guys will just take his minutes, so I don't know if he'd want to come back, especially because the Pacers are probably going to want to use bird rights to sign him and fill in the space around him, and then he'd be waiting around, and he'd miss his chance to sign somewhere else. So there's a lot of signs that point to it being tough for him coming back, but if he wants to, he has, like, all the means to do so. So it's really what he wants. If he wants to be in Indiana, he'll be back. Like, there's no way the Pacers don't bring him back. But the injury also makes his contract very intriguing. I don't know what makes sense for him. 3 for 15 might be, like, a little too much per year. That's not, like, what you want to hear. Honestly, that $5 million is too much for a guy that was so promising so recently. 2 for 10 with a player option, maybe, like, a prove-it thing for him. or a team option, excuse me, like a prove it thing for him or something like that. I think team option makes sense for him if he stays with Indiana, just because he would feel like they owe him something and the team feels like he owes them something because of the injury setback. So his next contract is going to be very interesting. But the thing that I didn't say in this contract things that, that might shake it up too is he's from Indiana originally. He went to high school here, so I think that adds another factor that he could want to hang around and stay in his home state. But again, it's ultimately up to him to decide what he wants. I think that I'm sure he likes it here. I mean, his career did grow to what it is now here, so maybe he'll return the favor and stay. But that's up to him. It's going to be interesting if he does come back. I don't know what his role will be. Maybe it's just a depth wing. Maybe it's backup two guard. Maybe it's backup three. Who knows? That would involve predicting the future of a lot of other decisions, and I don't plan on doing that. But if he does come back, for me, the next thing for him would be being a little bit better on defense in the post, which there wasn't a high enough volume this year to say if he improved that or not. But that would make him very versatile on D. And obviously, like I said, beating guys off the dribble instead of just being a cutter and a spot-up guy. But, you know, if he's back, he's back. We'll have to see how it goes. We might have to watch those improvements happen somewhere else or not happen at all. But that has been it for today's Locked On Pacers podcast about Glenn Robinson the third season. Adam will have Corey Joseph's season up on Friday, live from Naples, Florida. I hope you all congratulated him on his new and job endeavors in Naples. Thanks for listening. Have a great rest of your Wednesday, and we'll see you soon.